This is Take Flight with Mark Whittle.
Welcome to Take Flight. I'm Mark Whittle, former city worker turned performance coach. And this is your place for inspiration and education on ways to optimize your performance and find your purpose.
Is selection like harder than the operations or?
No. If your soul isn't in alignment with what you're doing, it's going to reject you at some point, somehow. Pain screams the loudest when it's dying. That was dying. Our immediate response is to basically lock away that trauma. That helps us get over the short term, but we need to deal with that. Foxy started talking to him. If I had not had that call from Channel 4, I could not have done Australia and the UK and had a business.
Did it hurt then at all?
It hurt my ego. I've spent the majority of my life not grounded and in an absolutely crap place. I think it was inevitable at some point that one of us was going to go.
Cabin crew, passengers, prepare for takeoff.
Ollie, welcome back to the Take Flight podcast.
It's a long time overdue. I didn't actually realise that it'd been 18 months.
Yeah, 18 months since I went to Breakpoint, the HQ.
Yeah.
Mate, firstly, thank you so much for having me at your house.
Pleasure.
This is outstanding. So if you're watching on the YouTube, you can see that we are sat in the most incredible setting in your back garden. I think it must have been 6 or 7 miles, like a single track. We got here very off grid. Yeah. I love it, mate. It's outstanding.
A few miles on horseback.
Yeah.
No, it is. Well, thanks. I just thought this, you know, everyone does the podcast in the room and it's just, you know, the outdoors is such a massive part of my life that I just thought, let's chop it up.
Yeah.
I'll have to say, though, that we've got, for the first time, this is the quietest place I've ever lived, apart from today. Because the neighbours have decided to get a new roof. Yeah, I'd make my apologies now for that, but we're just going to blast on through and the power of our voices will dominate.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to be seeing you again. The last time that we met, we got on so well, like there was an instant connection, so I'm really pleased we're doing it again.
No, likewise, mate. Like, you know, we had a chat before, as you do, and have such a different energy when there's people that know the topics, the content, what you're talking about, you know, is well received. It's like an energy, like I said before, you know, when you've got those people that, you know, when people don't understand what you're talking about, they're not, you know, they don't want help, they're in need of help, or they're just not on the same narrative. It's like a leaking bucket. You know what I mean? Your energy is just getting poured out and it's just going nowhere. But when you've got someone that understands and you're at that same frequency, it creates a circuit and that energy is phenomenal. So it's always a pleasure, mate.
Yeah, no, cheers, Ollie, mate. Yeah, we were feeding off each other, but this time as well, we've got the natural elements that are going to boost the energy. We've got a fire roaring in front of us.
Exactly.
Mate, it's a really special
moment. Earth, wind, and fire.
Yeah. What do we need? So, mate, let's kick off, right? I've got a pretty big question to start with. And hopefully this can help anyone in any situation, really. But the question is, where do we even start with looking at creating a successful lifestyle for ourselves?
First of all, I think, you know, what if one thing I could teach anyone or not teach, you know, just advise anyone to do is start becoming self-aware, aware of your emotions, aware of what's going on in your head. I know a lot of people are out there and they have not got a clue who they are. Further to support that, Murphy's wants to be on camera today. Second to that is there's so many people that aren't honest with exactly where they are at that moment in time. If you don't know where you are, you've got no chance of knowing where you're going. You know, I mean, you can't, it's like a GPS. It wants to know your location. It's like, you know, it's almost like trying to put into a GPS where you want to go and you're not telling it where you are. You know, you've got to be absolutely honest with where you are at that moment in time. No bullshit, no faking perfection. This is where I am. This is me. This is who I am. And I think that's a real standpoint first. You know, a lot of people, they're not in a great place. And it's great to have dreams and goals and focus on something really big. That's great. And that's exactly what I did. But the first 3 months of my journey, I knew I had that focus of starting my company Breakpoint. The first 3 months was not about Breakpoint. It was the foundation. It was the foundation. And that was me. You know, my physical health, my mental health, and just getting myself in a really solid foundation to then take on the goals and dreams that I had in front of me. But you can't do it unless you come from that standpoint. Your first focus has got to be you. Most important project is you.
Why don't enough of us truly know who we are?
I think it's bad education. We're not, you know, we're born into this world as amazing creative human beings. And fortunately or unfortunately, we are product of our environment, and that is the people around us, whether that's our parents, our family, whatever it is, you know, external factors. I don't know if you know, you're probably a bit young for this, but do you know what a Haynes manual is? Whenever you used to get a car, you used to get a Haynes manual. The Haynes manual used to tell you everything about that car. You know what I mean? If something went wrong, there was a fault diagnosis, you know, and it told you how to fix it, basically. A lot of people used to fix their own cars in, back in the old days. Yeah. You know, it's the same for us. You know, we haven't had that education. We don't understand who we are. We don't understand how we're wired. And that is so, so important. Before you start anyway, no one's giving you that education. So you're just taking that information, that education. You are a product of the environment that you've been brought up in. You know, you've been given that information by other people. You've been led by the blind. And I just think that, you know, people need to come into their own power of who they are to understand exactly who they are. And I think, like I said, going back to the first question, that is the first place you've got to look. It's incredible that people can go through their whole lives absolutely unconscious and asleep.
It's amazing, mate. I said to you in my voice note, because I was running a bit late when on my way here. I was listening to Bob Proctor on the way.
Brilliant, mate.
Who I know you're a big fan of, and who sadly recently passed away.
Mm.
He was literally speaking about what you just said there as far as understanding.
Yeah.
Right, understanding who we are, understanding our circumstances, our environment. Because understanding is the anecdote to doubt.
Mm.
And doubt is what causes us all of our negativity, all of our pain when we're trying to achieve things. Put grief and loss and stuff to the side. But when we have doubt about what we can do, imposter syndrome, all these names that people come up with, it's basically excuses for why we aren't achieving what we want to do.
Yeah.
It all comes from doubt. And the only way we can get through that
understanding.
Is by understanding.
Yeah, lack of understanding. It's so powerful. And just going on to Bob, because I'm actually doing the Bob Proctor course as a registered Proctor Gallagher consultant. The reason I'm doing that is because I still, you know, it's not the case that I want to sit under the wings of Bob Proctor, because I have my own content, my own story. But Bob Proctor was the one guy that when I went into that house, when I came back 2014, when I first started getting into self-development and started to really believe in this stuff, he was I listened to him every day, and he pulled me up from the depths of darkness. And I kept on using him, you know, even when times are good, you know, I kept on investing in Bob. And unfortunately, he passed away, but what an amazing legacy. I mean, I don't know, he's the godfather of self-development, as far as I'm concerned.
Could you paint a picture of what your life was like during that period? And then what were you learning from his tapes?
Yeah, that period in my life, I was starting to question everything, starting to question the world around me. It was when I stopped looking externally and realised that the happiness, everything is not external. You know, I've been bouncing all over the world, going to war zones, this, that, the other. It's not external. It's internal. That's where you need to look. There's no external fix. And he really taught me about looking inside of yourself. You know, this is where happiness begins. You know, and that might sound a bit woo-woo to some people, but it's absolute truth. You know, he taught me that, you know, everything is frequency. We are energy. We're absolute energy. And we work on different frequencies. That is absolute scientific fact. You know what I mean? But that stuff's kept from us. The true power of who we are, Bob Proctor basically delivers that. You know, he delivers, he wants people to wake up, be aware of the true power that we all hold inside. And society doesn't want that. Society does not want you to know who you are. You know, it wants you to be dependent on the system. It wants you to basically be a slave for society, for the system.
If it's someone's first time hearing, you know, about like energies or frequencies and how we all operate at different frequencies, and also that our power is by introspection and understanding who we are, like, how could you simplify the kind of steps that you went through for someone who's kind of like, all right, I've heard about these frequencies, heard about, you know, turning inwards, but I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, so for me, it was about writing stuff down. You know, I had a thing, we may have talked about it before, about the purpose pyramid. You know, and start to understand life is precious, time is precious. What are you going to do? You know, what have you got going on in your life that is contributing to your positive growth? And we should be growing, because if we're not growing, we're dying. So for me, you know, it's like write down things like, is alcohol really serving me? You know, I'm not, if people want to drink, that's totally up to them. For me, it doesn't work and I don't see the value of it. So for me, do I enjoy it? Does it add growth? Does it help others? Three things, XX, cross, 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 had to go. even the people around you. We are products of our environment. A lot of people start talking about DNA and, you know, we are, it's in our genes. Well, look, about 5%. Everything else is our environment. We are responding to the environment around us. So sometimes you have to get rid of friends. You know, for me, I set off on a journey to really start to change my life. I was 43 years old. I had no money. Everything looked very twee.
What society says is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had nothing. But for me, not having anything at that point, which is a really interesting point, it's how you frame things. For me, people go, oh, God, I've got nothing. I'm 43 years old. I'm sat here. I'm living in a borrowed house. I've got my mum's credit card, which was the truth. But for me, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. I'm sat in this house. I've got no pressure, financial pressures. I've got no distractions. This is a time where I can just focus on me. This is all about me. And that was an absolute gift. You know, to sit in that house for 3 months, I mean, saying that, a lot of people have been sitting in houses for 3 months recently and done nothing with it apart from make love to the fridge. But but the fact was, you know, that I sat in that house and I started to analyse everything that, you know, look at my history, all the things that hadn't been positive, weren't affecting my relationships, my jobs. And it's really starting to understand your purpose.
Yeah.
You know, start to understand what makes you happy. Is drink going to help me start my company? Is, you know, I came up with this dream. This dream was to start a globally identified, or to create a globally identified brand recognised for the positive growth and development of others. That was my dream. You imagine what my head's saying. I'm still drinking at the time. My head's going, you are kidding. It's almost like you've got that 1,000-person audience around you looking at you going, you are kidding. Look at you. You can't help anyone. You can't even help yourself. Chat, 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 chat. But you have to overwrite that. You know, for me at that time, it was about getting rid of that chatter, start to write, you know, start to really invest in three things, basically, mind, body, nutrition. Start to write down the things that were no longer serving me, people, habits, behaviours, and then start to understand what I had to eliminate from my life. And, you know, and this is the whole concept of Breakpoint, my company. You know, that was about that moment in time, that 3 months, that was the short-term discomfort. Long-term gain was coming, and that is Breakpoint. You know, every day I'm coming across breakpoints when your mind is going, oh, trying to take the easy way out, the path of least resistance. We're wired to take that. But it's about when you're aware, when you understand that stuff is going on, you can go, no, I'm not allowing that to happen. It's like last night, I sat there thinking, you know, shall I do the dishes tonight or shall I wait till the morning? And I always say a little voice in my head, are you being lazy? Yes, you are being lazy. Do the dishes now. You know what I mean? That is a breakpoint.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a simple breakpoint, but that whole ethos is about the fact that the more we can overwrite that, the more we can start to build resilience. You know, so I know I've gone around the houses on that one, but
it's brilliant, mate. Because what you're talking about there is habits, really, and how things become really deeply ingrained habits. If you said, no, I'm not going to do the dishes tonight, then you're less likely to do them the next night. You're less likely to do them the next night. Three months down the line, you've got a kitchen full of dishes every night and you live in, it's just becomes your standards at that point.
Yeah.
And also, I think, like, you have to go through those, you know, that phrase, like, break down to break through.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go through that stuff to deeply understand even that phrase.
Yeah.
You have to have had the breakdown.
Yeah.
Face the breakthrough and come through the other side to really understand what that means. And you've said a couple of other phrases that, like, it can sound like quippy little quotes.
Yeah.
But they're not. When you have experienced it and you actually understand what it means.
Yeah.
And people have to face that in order to get that understanding.
Yeah.
So what was the breakthrough moment for Breakpoint, if that makes sense? When did it start to... So it formulated an idea in your mind.
Mm.
You're in Australia at this point.
Yeah.
You had Australia. You had all this self-doubt.
Mm.
How did you push past those 1,000 voices in your head that were saying, you can't fucking do it, you can't look after yourself? What was the story behind actually making that breakthrough?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I don't know, the kind of awakening, if you want to call it that, sort of spiritual awakening, which it was, it came to me naturally, and it wasn't something, you know, that, you know, hit me square in the face. It started to slow, you know, sort of the positive mindset and everything. And I look back, a lot of my friends have always said, how can you turn everything, even when it's bad, into a positive? And I've always had that ability to do so.
You've always had that?
I've always had that ability. I truly believe that's down to the mindset. But when my life was sort of, when I was in Australia, everything was starting to close down. I wasn't I had a job out there, and it was, some people would call it bliss because I hardly did a thing. I got paid a great wage. I was working for an oil company, got paid an amazing wage. I didn't do anything. I went to the gym 3 times a day. I had a great time on the face of it, but I wasn't being challenged. You know, and I knew there was something more for me out there. I knew I needed to challenge myself on a daily basis. And that's when it started to change for me. And my contract was kind of coming to an end. And when you've got that with, you know, when you're, that's what your soul is saying to you, you can't lie to your soul. And for me, I wasn't happy there. I wasn't content. I knew there was something more for me out there. And I'll tell you, the answer to your question though, Mark, is the fact that positive affirmations. When you've got that negativity rolling around your head, positive affirmations. My first positive affirmation, and this is when it all started changing for me. Every morning I used to wake up and I said, I am ready to accept change. As difficult as it may seem, I know it's taking me to bigger and better things. Every morning repeatedly. Every time I had a negative thought, repeatedly. And then all of a sudden my world started to change. It was amazing. But when I say it's amazing, pain screams the loudest when it's dying.
It's challenging though, isn't it? Because we start to identify with these negative behaviour patterns.
Yeah.
Whether we like them or not.
Well, it creates energy, doesn't it? Even negativity creates energy and we all desire that. So that's why a lot of people find themselves moaning all the time, you know, because that energy is almost, it's contagious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the energy they're after, but sometimes that can be positive, it can be negative. But even with negative stuff, it's creating energy. People get addicted to that.
Yeah, absolutely. The painful thing is almost easier to get addicted to than the pleasure sometimes.
Yeah.
Like you can wallow in your suffering. How can we protect ourselves from negativity? I think just, you know, bit of context, the question. So much shit going on in the world. Mm. We were talking in the kitchen before about where we give our attention and where we allow ourselves to, you know, listen to things or not.
Mm.
So I think so many people are in habits of stuck on their phone, stuck watching the news articles. You know, we talk about lockdown every day. What's Boris said? What's Boris said? Mm. So how can we protect ourselves from negativity in our life?
Yeah, a great question and a really easy solution as well. When I went into that house, I didn't buy any newspapers. I didn't switch on the news. I made sure that everything I consumed, both orally and mentally, was of the highest quality that really suited the path I was or direction I was heading in. Now, I'm not saying you ignore what's going on in the world. That's not what I'm stating whatsoever. But you've got to start being conscious of what you're absorbing on a daily basis. First of all, you switch on your phone, something negative comes. That first 30 seconds of your day can ruin the whole day. You know what I mean? So first of all, it's really important that you don't reach for your phone in the morning. Secondly, I would advise no one that goes, you know, starts looking at the news expecting it's going to, you know, it's going to make them happy. It's not going to happen. You know, it's basically that fear that's addicted. They're always looking for that information, you know, something's getting better. And if you follow the news, it's never going to be that.
Do you know what I often wonder, like, because, you know, we're talking about understanding. Mm. We talk about understanding self.
Yeah.
I sometimes think that people intuitively know that's what they need to do. And they're looking to externally. News sources, other people, therapists, doctors, like, help me almost. But it's like we were talking about before, you've got to go from here.
Yeah, but that's the world that's been created, isn't it? You know, everything's on demand. You know, look at Amazon.
Yeah.
You want anything, it's there. It's at the door the next day.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, that's the world that's been created for us. Everything is external. It's like it's like working with your goals and stuff like that. You know, I said this the other month, it's like on Instagram, it comes from a decision, not a date. A decision is internal. A date is external. It needs to be an internal decision. You know what I mean? So really, everyone is looking for that external fix. It's the same, you know, it's the same with medication and stuff like that. There's a pill for everything. There's, you know, slimming tablets. I mean, injections, whatever it is. Not mean that is not the answer. People going to get plastic surgery, you know, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Just go to the gym.
Yeah.
Just stop working out, you know, and people are so addicted to the image of everything and we're drawn by the image. That's just human, you know, that's the way we're wired. But the fact is people are forgetting the feeling. You know, and if they can't control the ego, they're doing loads of stuff, basically, so it looks good from the outside looking in. They're creating a perception of perfection that is so untrue. That was the same for me when I joined the Special Forces. I thought it would look absolutely so cool for me to be a Special Forces soldier. It was pleasing everyone else. When I got there, the feeling was so totally different. I realised it actually wasn't my purpose. Yeah. I had a great time in there, and it's, you know, I'm very humbled to be part of that experience, but sometimes you have to go off track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To come back on.
That's like a big part of your journey, which allowed you to figure it out further down the line.
Yeah.
I think it's all back to healing yourself.
Yeah.
Having that. Doing that self-inquiry to understand those things, like that 3 months that you had, then you could have peace with yourself, so you no longer need that external validation.
Yeah.
But it's far easier said than done. Mm. Can we talk about like a specific example? I don't think we talked about this much last time.
Yeah.
But you were kind of like the front runner when the SAS Who Dares Wins show came together, right?
Mm.
It was kind of Ollie Ollerton first and then built around you?
No, I wouldn't say that. It was like me, myself and Foxy. I mean, Foxy phoned me up first. You know, I was in our house and it was actually Foxy that phoned me up. You know, it's quite incredible, actually, when I look back at it. It's such an amazing story for me, anyway. And that was, you know, sat in that house every day, you know, and I was starting, you know, obviously going through my practices every day. You know, stuff where I was even telling myself, you look like an idiot, you know, meditation, stuff I'd never tried before. But I was prepared just to give everything a go.
How long ago was that?
How long ago? That was 2014 in that house. And, but, you know, and I sat there, I'm just going to give, I've got nothing to lose. I've got everything to gain and nothing to lose. So I was prepared to really invest in that. Every day I used to visualize me and Foxy on a stage. You know, I wanted to start this company that was really about helping people from the corporate world generally, but from our experience, from operations, exercise, everything from our world, basically. And every day I used to visualize, sit there in my meditation and visualize me and Foxy. And I'd go into so much depth, engage all my senses, which you must do when you visualize. I knew exactly what we were wearing. You know, every step we took, I knew what was on the screen behind me. I could feel the audience, the energy from the audience, everything. And every day I did that, day in, day out, because I wanted this, you know, I had this goal of setting this company up. I wanted my first corporate client, da, 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 da. I was doing that every day for 3 months. You know, sometimes I'd be off doing stuff. I didn't stay right in that, you know, so I'd go out for exercise and things like that. And then at the end of 3 months, it was like, does this shit work? Does it work? And I was like, honestly, I was like, just give me a sign. Just give me something. I want something small. Just give me something. Same time around, at exactly the same time, my family are onto me getting concerned, saying, Matt, you know, you guys earn a fortune in war zones. Go back to Iraq. Go, you know, do that. And I was like, no, this is my dream. This is going to happen. Like, Foxy phones me up and he's like, you know, that idea we talked about for Breakpoint. And I went, yeah. He says, do you want to do that on TV? And I'm like, shut up, mate. I thought he was down the pub because I was trying to avoid the pub. I thought it was just a ploy to get me down the pub. And I'm like, no way.
Was he in Australia then at the time?
No, well? No. This is in the UK. This is when I came back to the UK. So I was in a house down in Cornwall. And I just got back in touch with Foxy after 13 years, I think it was by that time. And yeah, it was just like from that moment on, you know, every time I talk about it, hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And it was like almost I'd been asking the universe, please give me a sign that this stuff works. All right. I've been thinking about a stage and it gave me the best stage in the world. That was TV. That platform was absolutely the platform to launch Breakpoint, to launch me as a person. And I sat back and thought about that and thought, wow, because I'd been doing it so religiously, so disciplined, it delivered 10 times for me. It delivered 10 times. And people can sit there and say, oh, that's just bullshit. You know, it's just coincidence. Get rid of the word coincidence. I don't believe in that word. Everything happens for a reason. And that was a result of my positive intent for what I wanted to create. So that's really how it started. And then Foxy had been in touch. The reason Foxy was speaking to those people, because they'd approached him about doing this show. They were looking for former Special Forces soldiers, and Foxy started talking to him. He then got onto me, and that's where it all started, you know. And then we kind of went off on the recce, and the team was built from there, basically.
So where did Mark and Ant come into the picture?
Well, Mark wasn't actually on. Billy wasn't actually. He'll kill me if I say Mark. No, Billy wasn't actually on that one. We had another guy called Colin McLachlan. So he started off with the first series. And sort of had already been in talks, I think, with the channel, but for some reasons he couldn't do it. But I think Foxy went off and had, because Foxy knows him from serving, I don't.
What, knows Ant from
knows serving? Knows Ant, right. Yeah. It wasn't, I don't think they were close, but they did serve together. Yeah. So he went to see him, and next thing Ant got involved. And then a year later, Colin, for reasons we won't go into today, was excused, shall we say that? And Billy was brought in.
Right.
So, you know, and then that series two was the original crew that you see up to recent times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you read the book, The Celestine Prophecy?
Mate, I've got it. So I've absorbed it. Yeah. But I haven't read it. I started reading it a while ago.
Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a story about coincidences and how exactly as you just said there are no coincidences.
No.
Like everything is a sign for us not to overanalyze, but to read into or acknowledge, like, okay, what's the message from there, or what's the reason for that?
I think that's so important though, because every time I meet anyone now, every time something happens, I sit for a minute and analyze that. Sometimes it's irrelevant, but a lot of the times, you know, these coincidences that you just brush off as just, oh, that was weird, small world.
Yeah.
You've got to sit in that. Why did that just happen? Why did that just happen?
I mean, I can honestly feel that happening now. I'm thinking, why are they building over there?
Yeah.
Because it's putting our practice of not reacting to it.
Yeah.
I know it, like, it might be a little bit noisy for the listener, but I'm thinking, why is that happening now?
Yeah.
Because we've got the perfect setting. Something had to interrupt it for us to practice our,
exactly,
our response.
Our focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, it's because the natural response, especially when, you know, and I relate this to like early trauma in my life, you know, when I got attacked by the chimp as a kid.
Yeah.
Immediate response as a self-preservation mechanism or whatever you want to call it is to basically lock away that trauma. That helps us get over the short term.
Yeah.
But we need to deal with that. You know what I mean? Later on down the track. And the point I'm making there is the fact that people want to forget the negative stuff that has just happened. Like, we talked about something that we won't talk about on here, but something that happened to me yesterday that someone would consider absolutely so negative. But a lot of people, they don't want to delve back into the negative stuff. They're just like, they come up with that language that's, would happen to me, just my luck, so corrosive. They don't understand the power of words, the power of thought, and what that is doing to them.
It's that you fall into the victim very easily.
Yeah, and we are a victim-led society, aren't we? A victim, sort of, a lot of people, if they're not aware of themselves, if they're not grounded, if you want to call it that, you know, they very happily take on the role of the victim.
I just want to try and summarise some of the things that you've said, because it's absolute gold. So, Breakpoint and SAS Who Dares Wins the Show. It sounds like it was, the key was, yes, the practices, but the consistency in the practices. So over and over and over again, belief in the practices. And those practices are being visualization, meditation, focusing on mind, body, spirit. So that was your physical health, mental health, and diet, mainly. And then practicing your purpose pyramid, which is in your book, Battle Ready, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's so good, mate. And then also, just to add the end bit to that, which is this last bit, which is reacting to negativity, because there's the trauma, which is underlying for every reaction. Yeah. So you have to deal with that, but then also learn how to have a space between the stimulus and the response. So the stimulus, something happens, are you going to be reactive in that moment emotionally because of something that's you're carrying, or you're going to have the ability to pause and then respond.
Yeah, no, and that's why, you know, I've also talked, I came up with, you know, I started to I've discussed a lot with lads I used to serve with, mainly Foxy, really, you know, in later years after leaving the service. And I can remember we sort of addressed, how do we manage to slow those situations down?
Yeah.
You know, how, when everything is falling apart, everything is absolute chaos, how do we manage to control that situation so we put ourselves in the driving seat? Because the situation wants to get you by the scruff of the neck, rag you round and basically own you. You know what I mean? You can't allow that to happen. And basically, you know, I put that into a process, you know, and it wasn't so much in my day that we got trained to do this, but this is the process that we naturally fell into because we were so highly trained, so experienced at what we were doing. And they are actually starting to, they teach this in some special forces units all around the world now, but that is, first of all, breathe, recalibrate, then deliver. You know, and that breath, people have got to understand that when you go into any kind of negativity, any kind of stress, any kind of fear-based situation, your breathing becomes erratic. And when that breathing becomes erratic, your cortisol levels start to increase. Our brains can only handle 5 to 9 pieces of information at any one time. When we're stressed, that goes down to 1, maximum 2. And the reason for that is that cortisol increase. Now, I think everyone can relate to that when you've jumped in cold water, something like that, and it's a shock and you, that's exactly that same process, sometimes not as extreme. The only way to alleviate that is through breathing and stopping in that moment, not reacting straight away in that moment. At Sandhurst, I think they call it taking a knee.
Right.
You know, but the art of a real warrior is to be able to take a pause in the heat of battle. To really start, and this again, you know, this is really interesting for me because Breakpoint, when you look at Breakpoint, I can't tell it word for word, but I got so excited when I looked on Wikipedia and I put in Breakpoint. And Breakpoint in software development is an intentional stopping or pause put into the program for debugging purposes. So, you know, it gets to a point, it pauses, it starts to debug all the things that don't support the program before it carries on.
Yeah.
That is Breakpoint. That is Breakpoint. And that's the whole thing. When you breathe, you lower cortisol, you give yourself a mindset of clarity and not confusion. That's recalibration. That is when you start to let go of the things that really don't matter. You know, what do I need to deal with right now? And in that moment, you then deliver the action. But you should never take action in that heightened sense of emotion. You know, when you get into a situation, your mind just wants to get out. It will take the shortest route, the path of least resistance. 9 times out of 10, you are going to walk straight back into the firing line.
Yeah.
So it's just about that. That process for me is so important. Breathe, recalibrate, deliver the action. You know, 9 times out of 10, it's like even when we're having a conversation, and I'm trying to learn this as well because I tend to talk, try and get loads of content in, but there's so much in a pause. You know, when I pause, and you almost, it's not you, it's like I pause for a couple of seconds and I'm like, someone's like, this audience is going, oh my God, it's paused. You got to say something. You haven't got to say something. Just pause. There's so much power in the pause. You know, I mean, it's the same in any situation. You know, pause, get control of your faculties, recalibrate, deliver the action.
Yeah. I think you told me this before, was, you know, a stand-up comedian, some of the most important bits of the pause.
Yeah.
When he's delivering the,
exactly,
the talk.
Exactly.
Can we talk about, because a lot of that is preparation, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Preparing yourself so that when that does come up,
yeah,
then you can use those tools. What's the difference between selection in the special forces and then the operation? Like, is selection far harder? Because you know, you say like train hard, fight easy.
Fight easy.
Is selection like harder than the operations or?
No, it's not. I mean, listen, special forces selection doesn't make you a special forces soldier. It prepares you for further training. It basically gets you ready to fit into your team. You know, it gives you the basic skills so that if you finish selection and then you had to go out to a war or an operation, a war zone or whatever, you could actually function in that team. But really, I don't think there's any kind of preparation when the bullets are flying and everything. No kind of training can prepare you 100%. But at least it, you know, if nothing else, it allows you to be calm in that situation. And that is the answer to everything. You know, calmness in the heat of battle, being able to understand exactly what you're doing. You know, things can be happening. It's not a case of like you stopping and, you know, these things happen quickly, but it's just maintaining control of yourself through being calm in that situation, understanding exactly what's going on, deliver the correct action.
Is that something around expectation then? Because the training is setting an expectation for what you were going to then experience potentially on the battlefield.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take this back to my first time I actually experienced war. And one thing I'll say, you know, there's a lot of, throughout my career in special forces, it was nowhere near as active as it has been for people more recently, you know, in the times of the Middle East and, you know, Iraq. So one thing I'll say, I'll take it right back to joining the Royal Marines. I mean, that was the hardest bit for me because I joined as a civilian, joined the Royal Marines. I joined on a shiny brochure. You know what I mean? Again, looking at, oh, this will look great for everyone else. Saw the uniform. I thought chicks are going to love that. And And, you know, in the brochure as well, it's quite funny. In the brochure, it's like, I can remember looking and it was like there was a bloke, he was on a, you know, serving soldier on his windsurf. His girlfriend was sat on the beach, beautiful blonde hair, and was having a great time on leave. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. And then shortly after training, I finished training, got my Green Beret, and then I went over to Northern Ireland and I was still a kid. You know, I was 19 years old, and what a wake-up call. Nothing prepared me for that, and I grew up extremely quickly. But that training did not prepare me for that. The only preparation for war is your experience in war. You know, it prepares you for the next time and the next time. But, you know, any kind of training, it's looking, like Special Forces selection is looking for qualities as a person. Have you got the attributes that's needed to be able to be in those situations, face them and deal with them? You know, and that's what selection does.
Do you know what just came to mind there, Ollie, and it might be a little bit morbid, but it's kind of chilling to think that a lot of young kids lose their life still in that state of mind of a place of like, this is going to be a cool thing to do. Go away to battle, die young kid, and they never get the opportunity that you've had or that I have to learn about themselves and do that self-inquiry.
That is the unfortunate thing about war, isn't it? I mean, I actually look back on my life, you know, a lot of people, and I don't sit there thinking, oh, I wish I would have gone to Afghan. I am extremely happy and I feel very blessed that I had that amazing experience. You know, I passed one of the hardest selections in the world, and I'm happy that I didn't go to war on a continuous basis. I'm extremely happy that all my arms and legs are my own. You know what I mean? So, but it is unfortunate that kids do that. You know, they're doing it for the love of, or for the appreciation of the external world. They join the military and then that happens. They don't come back from there.
Yeah. I suppose that's...
Or if they do come back from there, a lot of them come back with, mental health issues and the likes, PTSD and everything else. So it is a shame.
Yeah. We have a responsibility almost to have a gratitude for where we are. Like, you know, we have this fantastic life and ability to talk like we're talking now. And, you know, there's all sorts of shit going on in the world. And me and you are sat in this beautiful space having a chat about this to try and help other people. And I think that's, like, got me through a lot is the gratitude.
Yeah.
And also you talked about decision making, which has been a big realization for me recently, which was a lot of the time, because I hadn't done the work, I was shirking decisions without really, no one would have seen it from the outside. Oh, Mark from Take Flight, you know, rah, 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 take a leap of faith. I was shirking decisions.
When you say shirking, what do you mean by?
Silly little things. I would make the decision what restaurant to go to.
Ah, right.
Silly little things like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I didn't want to pick the wrong one and the missus not like it.
Yeah,
you know. And I wasn't even aware of it.
Yeah.
Stupid little things like that. What do you want to watch? Oh, whatever you want to watch. Unless they're silly things, but they do translate into their business. And I'm not having full accountability with the money that I'm spending and things. Yeah. And then I end up looking at the account and I'm in the red.
Yeah.
Of course, you didn't really fully own that decision.
Yeah.
So it's an accountability issue, really.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing, mate, that you sit here and say that, because I love the fact that I can sit there and not pretend to be in fake perfection. You know, like I say, there's so many people out there faking perfection. Like for me as well, I mean, I see, you know, and identifying with your faults, your strengths as well as your weaknesses. If not nothing else, work on your weaknesses before your strengths.
Yeah.
If you can't identify your weaknesses, you're never going to get anywhere. You're faking perfection. You're trying to be someone that is genuinely fake. No one's perfect. You know, I'm the same. I have things going on that I know I need to sort out. You know, I'm fighting every day to be the best version of myself. I got up this morning, went for a run. It's a great day for it today, so it's hard to say no to that. But, you know, my head is telling me not to do it. And my head, I bleed and breathe just like everyone else, you know. And to think that I'm this kind of former super soldier that, yeah, he has no problem doing it because he was ex-Special Forces. I do. I have the same issues, the same mind chatter going on, the same negativity, but I know how to deal with it. Yeah. And that's why I say that one of the most powerful things you can do is start to become aware of what's going on in here.
Yeah.
Because if you're allowing that just to take control, you're not aware of anything, you are being bitch-whipped through life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's about taking control, ownership, understand the power and the beauty of who you are. And, you know, what's hard today, if you keep pushing against the grain, will become easy another day.
It's funny as well, when you do take accountability and you own it, how liberating it is.
Yeah.
Because then you can live and die by your own decisions. Yeah. It's like, great. If it goes wrong, great. Yeah. If it goes great, great as well.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Can we talk about, I don't think we discussed this when I last saw you, but something that from the outside in could have been seen as like the end of Ollie Ollerton as a personality, which was when you stopped being on Channel 4's SAS. Yeah. You don't have to talk about the details if you don't want.
No, I'm quite happy to.
Okay. So I'd love to hear how you used that sort of mindset and ability in the face of what would be perceived externally as a really bad situation to be off the show.
Yeah, I mean, I still talk about this, and it's like I can remember getting that phone call. And when I got that phone call, I laughed. I did honestly laugh afterwards, and I laughed to myself. I actually laughed internally when I was on the phone to the production company. And the reason I laughed is because that's what I've been telling myself. I talked about this before. If your soul isn't in line with what you're doing, it's going to reject you at some point somehow, or at least make the journey extremely uncomfortable. And that for me, you know, I wasn't enjoying it anymore. My sole purpose or focus back from 2014, my mission statement was to start that company, all right? So for me, the TV work, and still is to this day, is my second job. And I think that's one of the best advices, you know, best bit of advice I got from a guy called John Hay, who was with Channel 4 at the time, who said to us at the start, treat this like a second job. Always treat it like a second job, which rang true to me 100%. But for me, it's like, I kind of laughed because I'd been wishing for it. Deep down, the thing is, I'd never actually gone and said, look, you know, thanks for everything. I'm not going to go on, you know, I don't want to be part of the next one. It wouldn't have happened because I was so in that comfort zone. You know what I mean? It would have taken a lot of, you know, it would have taken me to be extremely distracted away from Breakpoint before I actually did that. Maybe I would have done it, but the circumstances would have had to change. But for me at that time, I kind of laughed and went, this is exactly what you wish for. Hmm. You know what I mean? And you can't lie to the universe. It's delivering exactly what you want. You know what I mean? And it did. But the thing is, for me, at that moment in time, just before that had happened, we'd started talking to Australia. Now, if I'd have not had that call, when I look at it now, if I'd have not had that call from Channel 4, I could not have done Australia and the UK and had a business. Or had the business working to a very, you know, to the degree that I want it to be. So for me, it was like, it was a stepping stone across into Australia. It was like a promotion. You know what I mean? It was just perfect for me. Do one of those productions every year, come back, concentrate on my business. I think it was inevitable at some point that one of us was going to go. You know, they were going to change over the DS or whatever. But I didn't know when that day was going to come. But I treat every show like it's its last. I'm in Australia at the moment. That's not to say I might be on the next one. Who knows? I'm not in control. One thing I am in control of is Breakpoint. And that's what is important to me. I have to be in control. We all have to be in control of something, okay? I don't want to be respondent to someone else's decisions. You know, I want to make my own decisions. I want to create my own path. I want to create my own footprints and not follow someone else's. So for me, it was a good thing. And, you know, even if it all ended tomorrow with the TV stuff, my focus would be Breakpoint and will be Breakpoint. I'm not fighting to get back on TV. I'm not fighting to be a personality. It's been a great tool for exposure. And I'll make hay while the sun shines. I enjoy the stuff over in Australia. There's me and Ant on the show over there now. And it's going really well. It's brilliant. The show's brilliant. It's I'm not going to start saying it's better, although it is. But it's just it's a breath of fresh air, you know. And it's amazing over there. I'm really enjoying it.
It's honestly so great to hear, mate. I love that. It's lit me up just like seeing you talk about it and feeling you talk about it, because it could have been perceived as negative. I love the fact that you said you basically asked the universe for it. So you smiled in that moment.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the Australia one, but from the clips that I can see, it's like you're better than you've ever been at before. Some of the clips are fantastic.
And
it makes for great TV.
Yeah.
And I'm just so pleased to see you enjoying it again, mate.
Yeah, no, thank you, mate. No, it is. I do feel like I'm a very different person on the Australian one compared to the other one. It's given me a chance to be exactly who I want to be. Mm. You know what I mean? So, but going back to that whole thing with the Channel 4 thing, that's why I said before, and if anyone can relate to that, pain screams the loudest when it's dying. Mm. That was dying. You know, the thing was, it fell apart. And although you can look at that and go, oh my God, this is the worst situation ever. Da-da. For me, it was like simple as I was losing a contract. I had a gap to fill. And I would fill that with Breakpoint. You know, pain screams the loudest when it's dying. Okay, put that to bed. It's gone. It's moved. Look around you. There is opportunity and crisis everywhere.
Did it hurt then at all? Did it hurt for a bit?
It hurt my ego.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then when I realised it's only my ego, then it doesn't matter. Once you're aware of your ego, you start to analyse, what has it hurt? Yeah. Oh, it's hurt me because it's going to be on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, how's it going to look? And they say, shut up.
But that's so important because we don't think about that. In the moment, it fucking hurts.
Yeah.
Now we can reflect a year down the line, year and a half down the line.
Yeah.
About that. That you've gone on to way bigger and better things. It's led to something else. And it all was meant to happen like that.
Yeah.
But in the moment, we sit in that and we wallow. And sometimes we never even move past it.
Mm, we don't. But the thing is, once you are grounded, and I say this because I've spent the majority of my life not grounded, absolutely crap place, to be quite honest. But when you are grounded, when you are in tune with yourself, everything that happens, happens for a reason.
Mm.
So everything that happens in my life, you know, happens for a reason. And every day that I've got that positive mindset, I've got that, you know, desire to be the best version of me every day, you know, it's not bulletproof, but I certainly know that it's going to deliver the best.
And what was the reason for not going with Channel 4 or not being part of that show anymore to get the Australia one?
Well, I mean, they rejected me.
Yeah.
So
what reason do you give to that rejection?
Oh, I see what you mean. It was basically clearing the path to something better. Mm. You know what I mean? It was like almost it filled the gap with another production over in Australia, which was absolutely amazing. If I'd have had both of those commitments, it would have buried Breakpoint. Yeah.
The thing that's making me smile is that early on in the conversation you said the goal, even before Breakpoint existed, was for Breakpoint to be a globally recognised company that was improving people's lives. So then you had the UK exposure and then you got to go back to Australia where it almost like full circle where you were living at the time.
No, exactly. I mean, there is that as well. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. But that is absolutely, you know, we've got coverage in the UK, coverage in Australia. A lot of people asking us now to set up over in Australia, which we are more than likely going to do, and start some of our events over there. But yeah, it fits in line with that mission statement. I think that's a really important thing as well. You know, people ask themselves on this show, ask themselves in general, what is your mission? What is your mission in life? People, you know, people can't even answer that. You know, we won the biggest lottery ever, and that was being created. You know what I mean? In sort of procreation, in that moment of conception, we won the race out of millions and millions and millions of other contestants. Now we're landed on this earth and the universe says, now what you got to give me? And a lot of people just sit there and just don't make anything of their lives. You know, they just end up in a flat spin and don't understand how powerful they are and that they can create anything they want.
Yeah, how to optimize the technology we've got.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask you one more big question, then we'll do some quick fires.
Oh.
So the big thing that we typically have to start with is that trauma, right? Because if we carry that, then all the other stuff, the daily habits, the cold showers, the running, all that, it just kind of is a band-aid. It's a plaster over that, or, you know, the sand that covers the bullet wound.
Yeah.
I know from reading your books and from speaking to you before that a big part of facing and overcoming your trauma was ayahuasca.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about that story in more depth.
How long you gone? Mate, that was such... I'm glad you brought it up because I've not really talked a lot about ayahuasca. But that was an incredible experience.
How did it come about in the first place? How did you learn about the ceremony? And
yeah, well, it was actually through my girlfriend from Australia, the one that was with me when I was in Iraq and everything else. Great girl called Nat, and I'd still been in contact with her over the years. And she actually said to me, she'd started doing work with ayahuasca and alternative. I don't know why they call it alternative, because it's natural. She said, look, I think this would be absolutely amazing for you. So I started to look into it. I started to think about it. And this is how beautiful the universe is again. You know, once I started to look into it, all of a sudden popped up on my Instagram, I'd liked someone's post called Heroic Hearts Project, which was a organization, a charity in the US that was using ayahuasca to help soldiers with PTSD. All of a sudden, they sent me a message, a guy called Jesse, who is the founder, And he said, mate, just wondered if you're in London next week, because I'd love to have a chat with you and possibly get you out to a retreat. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, as soon as you open up to the idea of it, start thinking about it. Again, when you're in sync. And that opportunity came up. Fortunately for me, my diary was free the week after. I ended up in London meeting Jesse, and he said, look, I'd love you to come out to Costa Rica, to Soltara. And we've got a load of veterans going out there. I'd like you to be one of them. So I immediately accepted.
So it was like a specific veteran?
It was a veteran one. You know, they'd basically not solely hired the place for them, but it was for veterans. You know, I think there's about 11, 12 veterans from all over the world, Canada, US, all over. And yeah, we went out to Soltara. And it was incredible for me, mate, because it's life-changing, absolutely life-changing. And for me, I came from a good place. You know, a lot of the people on that retreat were broken, absolutely broken. So they really needed that help. but for me, I was like, what am I going out there for? You know, so I kind of had to make up stuff in my head. You know, I want to make sure that I never push that self-destruct button again. I'll never go there again. Da, da, da. I didn't know the trauma that was still within me at that point in time. I had no idea. It was that deep-seated from when I was 10 years old, and that was the chimp attack. So when I went to see the shaman, you know, you have to go in for almost like an interview in this Maloka, massive open sort of house in the jungle. And you sit there with the shaman and he says, what's your intention? You know, and I said, oh, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm in a good place, but I want to make sure I never push that self-destruct button. And I said, yeah, and I've got some issues with the chimp that I think I need possibly a bit of unfinished business. I had no idea that I just, you know, threw that in there for content. Anyway, when we did the first ceremony, the first one was a light introduction to ayahuasca. And I was sat there thinking, is this working? I wasn't sure if it was working, you know, and they do it all correctly. So they've got to make sure that they don't throw you straight in the deep end. The first one I came away thinking, I don't understand this really. It didn't really work for me. Some people are going, oh, it worked for me. It was amazing. And so I was a bit disillusioned. First one, I was like thinking, this is not working. Maybe it's something to do with me. Second one, mate, totally different story. They upped the dose or the medicine. And man, it was just incredible. I'm sat there and then my whole world starts to turn into this, all these different sort of geometry. It was incredible. And it was, well, it's a psychedelic, you know what I mean? So, and it was quite funny when I was doing that because I was like sat there going, Jesus, you idiot. Of course it's a psychedelic. So I'm starting to smile thinking, this is brilliant. It was amazing. So you're going to...
I was just going to say, is that a feeling of fear when that happens? Things start to... Because what we understand is that a tree goes there, fence is there, ground's there,
yeah.
And then it starts to move and think that you can see the geometry in a different
yeah,
way.
Yeah, so, well, for me, I mean, I've taken psychedelics before, okay. So I kind of, you know, it wasn't a new experience for me. So I just thought, you know, this is amazing. You start seeing these different levels, these different planets. I mean, it's just incredible, this whole different world. But then it started taking me down a path. And really interesting. And the shaman are coming around, they're singing their songs and everything, and it's an incredible experience. And then I started to go into the chimp, and I was like thinking, I don't want to go there. I was trying to avoid it. I don't want to go there because there's so much deep-set trauma. Internally, I was trying to avoid going there. I was like, no, I don't want to go. And the one thing that you have to accept is surrender. It's such a good lesson, you know, in life, you know, you've got to surrender to yourself. But for a soldier, ex-special forces soldier, that word is not...
To lie down.
To anyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Surrender is not a great word to anyone, but especially for an ex-special forces soldier, surrender is a word that you know, I can't never surrender. But you have to just surrender to it. You know, that's the whole thing. Just surrender. Stop fighting it. Before I knew it, I was in a different world. I was that 10-year-old boy back again. And I was in the enclosure where the chimp was in front of me, and I was with the chimp, but I was in absolute fear.
Were you yourself?
I was me as a 10-year-old.
I was you watching yourself.
No, I was that 10-year-old boy really? Looking at the baby chimp in front of me, and everything was so real. It was so real. And then I heard the roar that I talk about to this day. I heard that roar. And I looked in the shadows behind and I saw something moving. And it was really interesting what happened at that point because I thought, oh, my God, and I was starting to fight again, thinking I'm about to get attacked. You know what I mean? And which obviously a massively traumatic experience for me. And at that moment in time, everything changed for me. I then went into the chimp that was looking at me with its young in front of it.
Became the chimp.
I became the chimp. And when I say I became the chimp, right, looking afterwards, I mean, everyone was laughing at this, but I was actually on my mat, on my knees, with my fist pressed into the floor, and I was roaring. Rah! And I became the chimp. And honestly, it was so real. I could feel that where I'd been laying down in the hot sun that day underneath the trailer, as I sat up, I could feel the leaves falling off my back. I could feel all the hairs on me start to stand up as my, you know, it was just incredible. But then it was mad, and I was looking at me and I saw myself as the 10-year-old boy over my baby. And it was almost like it turned into computer graphics at this stage. It was almost like Terminator. And it was like looking at me and it was going threat, 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 threat. And it was like, it was a crazy experience. But then I didn't attack me. It was incredible. I then went back into the boy, and it was almost like I didn't go back into the boy. I was still in the chimp then, but I started to then think about that situation. I've always talked about that situation being the victim. We take the victim role quite easily, don't we? It took me out of being the victim, and it started to allow me to believe or have so much compassion for that chimp, because all it was doing, I'm the one that walked in there that day. I'm the one that threatened its young. I was in the wrong. You know what I mean? It wasn't the chimp that was in the wrong. And then that started to teach me so much compassion for that chimp. It took me out of the victim role, and it really made me a part of the scenario as opposed to the main character, the victim. And it was just an incredible experience. And then that kind of drifted out. I didn't get attacked in that scenario. It took me away from that. But then that started, then when I was still under the influence of that medicine, I then started to think about everything in my life. Mm. I started to think about my wife now, Laura, who's got her son at the time, is 13 now. But and then it started to teach me so much compassion for Laura. It was incredible. You know, it's like, because I put so, you know, I started thinking, I put so much demands on Laura to run the business. We run the business together. And I started to think there's no other priority that's more important, whether it's conscious or subconscious or whatever, than William. It's not me. It's not the business. Her priority, through that animal kind of instinct, that primal instinct, is William. And that experience with the chimp then made me feel so much more compassion for my wife, for Laura, her circumstances with William and how much pressure. It was just an incredible experience. The second night, I thought, oh, that's it, it's finished. Again, I'm trying to deny that intimate trauma that I needed to go back to, and that was the attack. And the second night, I thought, I went under, and it was like brilliant, and then before I knew it, it's almost like you have these doors, all situations in your life, and it's almost like you can choose to go down. And I ended up going through this door, and it was, again, the chimp, and I was like, oh no. In my head, surrender to it, surrender, you've got to surrender to it, stop fighting. Yeah. I went back into that. Next thing, I was the boy again, and the thing was charging at me. The next thing, it was on me, it was ripping me to bits, and it was horrendous, mate. See, when I've looked back at that situation, it's almost like I've been lay there, there's no noise. It's like almost I've switched off that intimate trauma as the self-preservation mechanism, which I started talking about before. And it was hideous. I was screaming, I was crying, I was in absolute horrendous state of shock. And then it's almost like it freeze-framed and it stopped, and a voice in my head said, what would happen that day if you didn't fight? Because I fought the chimp in the end. What would have happened if you'd have not fought that day? And then, I kid you not, I lay down and I died. I went into this other world. But before I died, I lay down and I opened my eyes. My wife, Laura, was next to me, looking into my eyes, her beautiful blue eyes, and I said, come with me. And then we went into another world, mate, and we then became spirit, and I was no longer a physical being, and we were on a totally different world. It was incredible, just the sounds, everything. It was just incredible. I didn't want to come back. I just didn't want to come back. It was almost like I'd died and gone, and that was it. But then it said, you've got to go back. This voice in my head again, you've got to go back. There's people that need you. And I went back and I came back into that experience. And that really, after that, that kind of ended shortly after that. It was extremely traumatic. But that, again, taught me, you know, in reflection, I was reflecting, going, stop fighting. You know, the whole lesson there for me was stop fighting. That doesn't mean in wars. Since that chimp attack as a kid, I was fighting everyone. Up until the age of 43, was it when I went there? No, sorry, later than that. 48, I think I was when I went there. Up until the age of 48, I've been fighting the system. I've been fighting everyone. And it was like, stop fighting. That was the message from that. It was incredible. It was incredible. And it taught me so much more. You know, it's just, it was an unreal experience. The night after that, it was like they call it bringing the plane down to land. So they reduce the medicine a bit and they make sure that you drift down. You know, it's all done absolutely amazing. But I'll tell you what, one reflection as well, as I was going into sort of after I'd taken the medicine, you come up with loads of observations. You really get to observe yourself. And I started to think that what we do as humans, you know, we put so much energy into the perception of this person we want everyone else to like. We then become the byproduct. You know what I mean? And the social media has to blame a lot for this, but so many people are investing so much into creating the persona of perfection that the person they really are gets neglected, it becomes the byproduct. That is the real person that is you. And it was really about, I mean, I'm not saying don't, you know, social media is a part of life. It's obviously a part of, you know, I use it for my business, but you can't allow to invest yourself in anything but yourself. You've got to be the main focus. You're the host, not the guest. You know what I mean? It was just incredible. My work, you know, I've got to go back because it's what happened. I mean, it changed me massively. But before you then come back into society, and society then dilutes.
Reconditions you. Yeah, mate.
But
wow.
Incredible. I'd recommend it. And I tell you one thing, it's like all the people that are on that, you know, some really damaged, very damaged veterans, that all of them, not one of them didn't come away without having an amazing experience. And it was life-changing for them all.
What an amazing story, mate. Yeah. Thank you. Jeez,
I've drifted over it, mate, but...
Mate, that was powerful.
Yeah.
I felt that very somatically, like I could feel you sharing that story. What it sounds like is an incredibly like drastic shift in perspective, but on a deep level where you truly understand it and feel it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing, mate. It's something that I've been considering for a long time, but I needed to do a lot of work before.
When are
we
going?
Oh, mate, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I'll get it sorted, mate.
Okay.
We'll get a group of us and go.
Yeah.
Because I'm overdue.
I feel the resistance already, but I'm in.
No, I'll tell you what, because it is, there will be resistance because you are going to face yourself. You know what I mean? And sometimes there is, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's psychedelics. It's going to be a bit, it's not, you know, this is real focused work on you and it's real deep dive into yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I'm all in. I'm all in, mate. I'd love to do it with
you. Well, let's get it sorted.
Okay.
Deal.
Mate, the last three, we did these three last time.
I'm not good at these.
Quick fire questions. No, you're great at these. So, firstly, there's so much to take away from what we've spoken about. So it might be stuff that we've already covered. But if there was one thing that you're particularly excited about that you've recently discovered, what would that one thing be?
The power of who I am.
Mm.
The power, you know, because like you were saying before, you know, you can identify with your weaknesses. I mean, it was only last night, actually. I was sat there in around the ballroom. Sounds quite official, but, you know, with me and the team. And I really came to, you know, we've just been on a podcast with someone over in the States about how we start to really scale up the business and everything else. And I started to really understand or realise that I've been living within limits. I know a lot of people, and I always talk about pushing outside of your limits. It doesn't mean that I'm the perfect executor of that theory. You know what I mean? I understand it 100%, but I've realised that I've always... Go and get a Murph. I always, you know, I look back over everything and I've always felt that I needed someone to help me. You know, up until, I'm still subject to this issue. Feel that, you know, is it Foxy? I need his help to do this. You know, I can't rely on myself. And it's almost like a bit of insecurity. And last night I really identified that awareness of the issue is the first massive step, as you know, Mark.
Yeah.
In resolving that problem. Once you're aware of it, you admit it, you're aware of, you know, you've observed it, I've got that little bit of lack of self-belief. You know what I mean? Now I've identified it, and those around me identified it as well. You don't need anyone else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't need anyone else. I've already got enough. I've got enough stories, got everything I've got. A powerful story. I know I've got that. And I don't need to rely on other people to get that out there.
That's fantastic, mate. And that's, you got to stay open to that all the time.
Yeah.
So those things will come in, you'll learn more
100%.
About it. 100%. One habit you recommend all listeners to undertake?
Exercise. You know, there's loads I could throw in there. But exercise, I truly believe that exercise is one sure way of, I actually put a post on this morning. That post on Instagram really fits into this. Now, you can't outthink low self-esteem. You can't outthink lack of self-worth. You can't outthink depression. You can't sit there and think, I'm going to think myself out of it. Talking's good. Being aware of the problem is great. There's no better activity to rewire your brain and allow your brain to understand that limits are self-created, you know, like depression, everything else. It's self-created, but there's nothing better than exercise to really overwrite that program.
Yeah.
So for me, whatever it is, even if you're just getting up and walking around, it's about investment in yourself. So that is the most basic thing I would say. You know, if you are feeling low, if you are feeling a bit depressed, if you are feeling your life isn't abundant, and that could be from a whole manner of things, then you need to get out. You need to change something. As far as I'm concerned, right, a lot of people are walking around this state of depression. That is the mind telling you, you've got to change the pattern.
Yeah.
That's all it's saying, change the pattern. You know, stop, we're caught in this repeat habit loop. It offers us nothing whatsoever, but it's so hard to break out of that habit loop because our minds are addicted to repetition. So that's why it fits back into the whole thing, the break point. You have to break the cycle.
Yeah.
Me getting out and doing exercise this morning, you know, that was, you know, my head was saying to me, you know, you worked out yesterday, you've got Mark coming today, you need to set things up. Mm. Get the fuck out there and do some exercise. Yeah. Because if I don't do that and I come back, it really works negatively for me. You know what I mean? So exercise.
It's great, mate. It's great. And that's allowing your higher self to make that decision.
These aren't quick fire, are they?
Is that? No, they're
not
good.
One thing I'd say on top of that is goals, mate. Goals. Yeah. Everyone has got to, you've got to have goals. And you know what? It's not about achieving. It's not what you achieve on the day of achieving that goal. And sometimes you might not achieve it. It's the person you become in the process.
Right.
So, so powerful. And when you don't, you know, people don't understand, everyone is driven towards goals. Our minds are a goal-striving, goal-getting machine that stops at nothing till it gets what your dominant thoughts focus on. Yeah. So you have to have things that challenge you. You have to have things that make you feel like you're making progress. That's the answer to a lot of people's mental health issues.
And that's, again, you know, these quippy things, which is just the journey, not the destination. But
yeah.
It really is the journey,
it is,
not the destination.
Fact. It's fact.
Thank you, mate. Last one. The single trait within you that allows you to have had the success that you've had to date.
My ability to totally contradict the negative messaging in my head.
Mm. Yeah.
That is the one thing, you know, and people understand that the more they can do that, you know, once you've got that negativity, if you sat down in your head saying, oh, my life, you know, I don't exercise, I put on weight, da-da, totally get up in that moment.
Mm.
Contradict the messaging in that moment. You overwrite the program. And every time you do that, you build a new person.
Mm.
You know what I mean? If you sit there and wallow in self-pity, you become the victim.
Yeah, and backed by science with neuroplasticity and the neural pathways.
And I think also on that, one thing I'd say, mate, is the fact that, you know, people have got to, it was a big turning point for me when I actually realised we could change.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you know, I got to a certain point in my life and went, this is just me, this is my genes, it's in my, rubbish.
Yeah.
Neuroplasticity, we can change and be the person, anyone that we want to be, and we are a product of our environment.
Yeah. Mate, thank you so much. It's been amazing.
Loved it, mate. As always.
Yeah, as always, mate. And we'll get that ayahuasca trip booked.
Yeah, you will. And did you press record?
Oh, no, I didn't. Mate, thanks so much.
Oh, thanks,
appreciate
buddy.
It.
Welcome to your destination.
Hey, it's Mark Whittle. Thanks so much for watching or listening. It's so great to have you a part of the Take Flight movement. Subscribe to the podcast on all platforms, video and audio, to be the first to see new episodes and new conversations with the greatest minds in the world. Follow me at markwhittle_TF on all social platforms and visit takeflightworld.com to join our growing community of hustlers,
performers and go-getters. I can't wait to see you next time. Until then, stay positive, stay motivated, and of course, take flight.